Welcome, everybody, to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, with tips, tricks, and coaching discussion for all cyclists, from beginner to advanced, from casual riders, club riders, all the way up to seasoned racers. I'm your host, Coach Rob, and on today's show, we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, the good old-fashioned New Year, New You, which you've probably all seen on the cover of Bicycling Magazine yet again for I don't know, probably the 8th or 10th or 12th or whatever year in a row. So, we'll be talking about that. But first, I want to go back and do a little bit of housekeeping, just like we always do, make a few announcements and such. Number one, you people have noticed that I've been in the middle of updating my site at tailwind-coaching.com. And there have been some changes going back and forth, some pages appearing, disappearing, all kinds of things happening over there. Let me explain what's been going on. I've been in the process of trying to redesign the interface to make it a little bit more user-friendly and a little bit easier for you, my listeners and customers, to really peruse, browse, and be able to use much more fluidly. Unfortunately, WordPress, which I use as my primary software to manage the website, recently updated to version 3.5. Not all of the plugins which I use for the website to try and keep everything running smoothly, not all those plugins actually are compatible with the new version 3.5. WordPress, whatever you want to call it, the main program, the parent program. So, some of the pages you've noticed have disappeared. I'm working on that, trying to get that up and running as soon as I possibly can. Once that's actually working, I will, I'll put those back up and we'll get back to it. Second thing, you'll notice some changes in my coaching offerings. What I'm planning on doing, and I'll let you guys into a little secret to know before anybody else, I'm actually planning on moving away from specific downloadable training plans. And what I mean by that, instead of having like an 8-week beginner program, an 8-week force program, a 12-week beginner program, a 12-week to a century program, and on and on, I'm going to be moving towards what I call a modular-based training system. Now, what does that mean for you who's looking at training plans? What it means to you is that you have a great flexible option and a great flexibility to build a training plan and a training system for your needs. So, for example, as I've posted now and actually had posted for maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks now, with the holidays around and all that, I have a base module, a build module, and a peak module all currently available. I'm working on a few other ones, but I'll get to that in a minute. So basically what you would be doing, you'd be taking each module and layering your training on top of each other. So for someone who's looking to peak in perhaps 5 months, a 3-month build module. After that, you tack on a 3-month base module. You tack on a 2-month build module after the fact, and then follow it up with a 2-week peak module, and you have a ready built 5-month or 22-week, actually, it's actually 22 weeks, 22-week training program. Now, I also plan to release specialty modules like climbing modules, sprinting, group riding, modules, perhaps time trialing, endurance building, any variety of modules, especially if you, my listeners and customers, give me feedback, things that I can do for you. A lot of these modules will probably be integrating my high-intensity trainer workouts, as well as the standard workouts that you would see in any of my training plans and modular training systems. I'm still planning on offering individualized training plans for some events, specifically things like Tour of the Bat and Kill, something like that. I'd be offering a specialized plan for that because really there are some events out there that are very specific in their needs and requirements. Like I said, you could go to Bat and Kill with a modular plan like I have up there and do very well. But the demands of a race like that requires, you know, extra thought process in the planning. The Bat and Kill plan is not just simply I took the same plan and said ride some of these on dirt roads. It has nothing to do with that. It's very specifically designed to maximize the skills and the fundamentals that you need to be successful at a race like that. So, that being said, look for the modular plan on the upcoming weeks and months. Look for the specialty modules coming up shortly, and very soon I'll do either a post or a podcast on putting together modules and how to really make things happen. Okay, that being said, we're done with our housekeeping. We've got nothing else that we really need to think about. So let's get on to the topic at hand. Thanks for sticking with me through that. Now, new year, new you. New year, new you. Now, what does that mean? What does it even mean? It's been on the cover of bicycling for, probably a dozen years now. Every year it's the same old thing. Set a goal, and work towards your goal, and work on your weaknesses. Ridiculous. First of all, I question even the definition of new year, new you. Unless you're dying and being reincarnated as of January 1st, I don't believe that there's going to be a new you anywhere out there. I'd actually like to change that, and I should change the topic of my podcast, which you'll probably see in the title, is going to be New Year, Better You. Not new, better. We're going to take basically all of the things that you learned last year, all of the the headway that you made, all the fitness you gained, and we're going to make you better. How? Very simple. Just by understanding certain things that you can and can't do to make yourself better. All right. So what do we mean by that? Well, first of all, you really have to think about yourself and your body as an athletic machine. Okay. People are very much like a car. Okay, your body is essentially the engine, if you will, for your mind to do something. Or you can look at it this way: your body is the engine, and your bike is the chassis of the vehicle. All right, some people have, some people are a Honda Civic. In fact, most of us really are Honda Civics, and some people, very few of us, are the Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and whatnot. So, if you're comparing a Pro Tour cyclist and their Ferrari-like engine to your little four-cylinder Honda Civic grocery getter, you can see that there's definitely a bit of difference there. But, and any of you who live in, particularly in the Northeast, will know this, how many times have you seen a little Honda Civic with a fart can muffler on the back, fart can muffler, B-can, fart can, whatever you want to call them, one of those really loud little cat-back exhaust mufflers, and a turbo on that sucker, and a body kit, and lowered suspension, and bouncing around with neon lights and all that. Somebody took a Honda Civic, which is basically an economy car with a small, simple engine, relatively speaking, and through modifying it, turned it into something that can be exceptionally fast. This is no different than taking your little Honda Civic of a body and through modifying it or training it, turning it into something better. So a new year, you could have a better engine and a better you. So, and you're probably thinking, but I worked so good last year and I worked so hard and I got to a spot where that's going to be amazing if I actually reach that again. To be perfectly honest with you, no, that's not true. Potential, your body's potential and your physical potential is rarely reached unless you've essentially been doing finely, carefully structured training for years and years and years on end. Only when an athlete really gets into a structured training program and really works on focusing on their weaknesses and increasing their strengths, do you really get somebody who starts to bump up against genetic potential? And that's what we're going to talk about. Because genetics are the things that really dictate your absolute top of the line fitness. That's why you have a certain group, a certain select number of people who are those Ferraris and Porsches and Lamborghinis. Those are those people that can really, they have a genetic gift. They have an abnormally, ridiculously high VO2 max, which is partially dictated by genetics. But they have a certain propensity, say a sprinter has a certain percentage of fast twitch muscle fibers versus slow twitch muscle fibers that perhaps a little spindly Colombian climber has. That's something you can't change. You're generally born with that. Sure, there are different fiber types. You have basically you have an aerobic fiber type, a type 1, and a type 2 fiber. The percentage of those is generally fixed and can't really be moved about much. However, among those type 2 fibers, those anaerobic fibers, there are some fibers in that category which can be trained or almost converted to be more aerobic. So you can build more aerobic fibers essentially out of them. Or if you happen to be someone who shows some genetic propensity towards short burst energy sprinting, you can turn those fibers from aerobic towards the anaerobic side of things, and you can basically shuttle them back and forth based on your training and your needs. So while essentially your fiber makeup is more or less genetic, you can play with that a little bit, but the physical number of those fibers is genetically limited. And the same thing with muscle mass. Muscle mass is certainly something, along with body size, that you can't really change unless you're doing something unnatural, which we're not going to talk about that in this podcast. Even though I have a great interest in that topic and a great interest in the science of that topic, we're not going to go there. You can find that on the web if you really need to. But muscle mass and body size is just something that you're born with it and you're not changing it. So you have to work with what you have. That's why you have these really, pint-sized, particularly Colombian. I go back to the Colombians again, like a Juan Mauricio Soler, Pro Tour rider who's maybe 5'5" and all of 110 pounds at most. These guys make exceptional climbers because of their body size and their power to weight ratios. So, again, something you're born with genetically, you can't really change. And another thing that could be changed possibly, but generally is not, is body biomechanics, femur length, tibia length, propensity for foot dorsiflexion versus plantar flexion, back flexibility is somewhat, you can work on that, but pelvic tilt, things like that. There are plenty of things in biomechanics that are really genetically set that you're not going to change much, particularly things like leg length, femur length, torso length, etc., etc. Those are things you have to work around. All right. But the good news for most of you out there, and I'm probably speaking to almost every one of you who hasn't been training to your potential, the nice thing is that most of the factors that make us an effective cyclist are really very, very trainable. And we're going to talk about those all one at a time with a few tips on how we can train each one of those. Okay, now, so if we're talking about training factors, training your body, and finding things that your body can adapt in order to be more effective, faster, stronger, leaner, better cyclist, a better you We need to look at things like thresholds, VO2 maxes, fatigues resistance, weight, skills training, and training with a purpose, things like that. So let's talk about your aerobic threshold, your ability for your body to produce energy in an aerobic state. You can raise that aerobic threshold by specifically training in that zone, in particular your sweet spot training zone, 90%, 90, 91% of your functional threshold power, around 90, 92% of your lactate threshold heart rate. You have a certain training zone, very, very small, that is exceptionally good at raising that aerobic threshold, increasing the stroke volume of the heart, which does have a genetic ceiling to it, the stroke volume of the heart, decreasing the heart rate per stroke volume, okay, and increasing the amount of mitochondria in cells and increasing capillary density, increasing plasma concentration. All these things are physiological adaptations to aerobic exercise and aerobic training, all of which allow you to put out more power at a lower threshold heart rate. Let me say that again. If you have a threshold of 194, I'm sorry, 174 beats a minute, and you put out 210 watts at that 174 beats per minute, how nice would it be if you could put out 210 watts at 172 beats a minute? Or going the other way, how nice would it be to put out 220 watts at 174 beats per minute? Essentially, what we're talking about is basically increasing your body's ability to make energy available, to make energy available to your muscles to put through the pedals, through the cranks, into the wheels, into the bike, without consistently raising your heart rate even further. All right. And all those genetic aerobic adaptations, all of those training adaptations really try to make that a reality. So, aerobically, to raise that ceiling, get into your sweet spot zone, 90, about 91% threshold power, about 91%, 92% lactate threshold heart rate. You're going to want to stay there. Generally, you're going to be doing those 20-minute intervals. Long intervals, not terribly fun, but long intervals. All right. VO2 max, something that could be genetically determined, could very easily be genetically determined, but research has shown that it is variable. It can be raised or lowered. There is a physiological ceiling to it for each person, but most of us don't even come close to that physiological ceiling. VO2 max intervals are very simple. You have to work over that threshold significantly, 115%. Anywhere between 106 and 120% of your functional threshold power is going to put you into that VO2 max zone. And that's defined as something that you can, an effort that you can hold, something you can hold between 3 and 8 minutes. So this is very simple. If we want to raise our VO2 max capability, we have to spend more time at VO2 max. Okay? So, 3, 5, 7, 8 minute intervals, 115 to 100, 105 to 120% of functional threshold, above 105% of your lactate threshold heart rate. Those kind of intervals they're extremely tough. And by the time you're done, you should feel like you're just about ready to throw up. But honestly, if you want to raise that VO2 max, raise that VO2 ceiling so that you can produce more energy as you're partially anaerobic for a longer period of time, you have to train your body to do so. So you're talking 3x5s, 3x7s, 4x5s, 4x7 minute intervals. Think of those as your 1 to 1.5 mile hill climbs. Those are perfect training intervals for that. Okay, gotta have a little bit of beer here. I'm getting a little bit all excited about this. Next trainable thing that we can talk about that will make you a better cyclist in the new year is working your fatigue resistance. Fatigue resistance is basically a form of endurance. And what it is it's the ability of your body to continually produce a certain amount of energy without breaking down. You've heard me talk many, many times on this podcast about muscular endurance. about the importance of muscular endurance in your training. Well, muscular endurance in your training is important because of this concept of fatigue resistance. If you don't have the muscular endurance to make an effort stick, you will crash and burn, not literally crash, but you will crash and burn in terms of your physiology in a rather short period of time. How many times have you gone out in the beginning of the season and you've hit like 35 miles, or you've hit 2 hours and suddenly your legs start to cramp and you start to bonk out and you're really tired and you're really saying to yourself, man, what the hell happened to me over the winter? I used to be able to ride for 6 hours at a time. I used to be able to climb 5,000 feet in a day, and now I can barely do 2,000 feet in an hour and a half or 2 hours without just feeling like complete crap. Well, to be perfectly honest, your fatigue resistance has decreased significantly. The human body is very much a case of if you don't use it, you lose it. So if you don't get out there during the winter or during whatever time you're off, get out there and practice or train your body will return to a previous state. Your body's constantly in a state of entropy where it wants to get rid of excess things that it's not using, that it doesn't need. That's the point of training. We constantly stimulate the body to make adaptations to build our body stronger. So if you do, for example, a VO2 max interval of 5 minutes, your body says to, your body's basically saying, well, why'd you do that to me for 5 minutes? And then it thinks, this guy might be crazy enough to do that again. So maybe I should really work on building myself up so if this guy does that again, that I'm ready for it next time. That's the whole concept behind training for anything, is to make an adaptation that your body will hold on to for a predetermined amount of time, even if it's a few weeks, which is the point of, which is, by the way, the theory behind peaking. Hold on to that adaptation for a few weeks, all right, until it starts to degrade that adaptation. If you don't use it, your body says, geez, he hasn't done this for a while. He must not be good, probably not going to be doing that again. I don't need to maintain that kind of fitness. I don't need to maintain that kind of, skill. And it lets it go. So that explains why you get out there and suddenly your fatigue resistance or anything else has kind of gone down the tubes. All right. So now we've got aerobic threshold, VO2 max, fatigue resistance. The big thing that I've been talking about here that I haven't mentioned yet, and perhaps the one of the biggest indicators of success, for lack of a better term, in an aerobic endurance sport would be lactate threshold or functional threshold power. Functional threshold, lactate threshold, I'll use them interchangeably. One is a measure of watts and power, one is a measure of heart rate. One's a measure of output versus one's a measure of input, but that's completely another podcast, which I already covered in the FTP and threshold podcast about 3 4 weeks ago. Go check that out if you really want a very in-depth discussion of that. But in any case, threshold is extremely, extremely variable. As you pursue a structured training program, particularly utilizing aerobic sweet spotting type intervals and VO2 max type intervals, you will start to see one of two things. You will either see your lactate threshold heart rate start to climb. Maybe go from 170 beats a minute for, I'm thinking, a 30, 35-year-old, 30-year-old cyclist, something of that nature. Go from 170 beats a minute to 172, 173, 4, 6, 178, 180. You'll see that threshold climb. And threshold would be essentially your 1 hour constant effort heart rate. So if you took say a 40K time trial or 1 hour time trial, that's the average heart rate you would record going full out in a time trial. You'll see the same thing, in fact, even more specifically with functional threshold power, you will see that threshold power rise 210 watts, 220, all the way up to, you know, the sky's the limit. You could have someone who goes from 200 watts in the dead of winter in the 1st of January up to 300 watts, you know, by their peak in, say, July, if their training is appropriate for them. The interesting thing with thresholds, if you compare, like I explained before, heart rate threshold and power threshold, you can actually see, in some cases at the same level power, it's 210 watts, my heart rate dropped 2 beats a minute. Or at 174 watts, at this threshold, my power went up 15 watts, 20 watts. There are plenty of ways that you can see this. Now, how do you train this kind of threshold jump? VO2 max intervals are very effective. Recent research, a lot of it coming out of Australia and the Australian Institute of Sports, is showing that high-intensity training, high-intensity exercise, has maybe not the exact same benefits as a longer duration, lower intensity exercise, but it does have many of the similar benefits and many of the similar adaptations that a lower intensity exercise would have given a much longer duration. So those VO2 max intervals that I talked about before, which will help raise VO2 max, will also help to raise that lactate threshold. Another way to raise that lactate threshold would be by doing FTP intervals or threshold intervals. Now, perhaps the least fun interval that I do in any of my training plans, and obviously and definitely the least fun interval that I do myself, you're talking between at least 15 and 25 minutes of constant riding between 95 and 105% of threshold power or heart rate. I'll say again, between 15 and 25 minutes of riding plus or minus 5% of your lactate threshold heart rate or functional threshold power. Those are incredibly taxing intervals to do, but they are very, very useful intervals. They will have a huge return on investment once you actually manage to get through them. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of things that are physiological now. All right, we talked about our aerobic threshold, our lactate threshold. We've talked about our VO2 max and our fatigue resistance. Next thing to think about in terms of training to make yourself a better cyclist is going to be some things that maybe aren't physiological, but they still make a big difference in how you will ride as a cyclist. And putting it quite simply, those things that will make a big difference in the way that you ride as a cyclist and the way you perform as a cyclist are things like weight, your skills, and your specific training. Now, what do we mean by all that? Well, obviously, weight is pretty self-explanatory. We put out a certain amount of wattage, a certain amount of power, and we have to push a certain mass, both ourselves and our bike, along at that power. Now, if you want to go faster, that we call that a power-to-weight ratio, by the way, if you actually get down to it. You can break it down by watts per kilogram, which is a huge measure of competency and really the only valuable measurement of comparison between one cyclist to the next. It's not really speed, it's not hill climb time or anything else. You're talking watts per kilogram to really compare apples to apples when you compare two cyclists. So that being said, to increase that power to weight ratio, you have the option of raising your power, which, well, if you think about it, is not as easy as you would expect it to be. You're raising your VO2 max, you're doing your aerobic work, you're doing your fatigue resistance work, you're raising your threshold, eventually it becomes much harder to raise your power to a point where it actually can affect your power to rate ratio significantly, especially if you're carrying around excess weight. How many of you who are listening here can, you know, are sitting at your desk right now, you've been sitting there for a couple hours, you're sitting on your couch, or whatever the case may be. And you're looking down, and you see that pudge, that gut, that beer belly, that extra weight that you're carrying around that you don't need. It does nothing. It serves no purpose to you except make you heavy and make you slow. So one of the things you can focus on in the new year to really make yourself a better, stronger, faster you is get rid of that beer gut. Raise your metabolism. Do some of those high-intensity work intervals. Do some of that high-intensity work. Move that metabolism along. Burn some excess calories. Check your diet. Even talk to a dietitian or see. There's a wonderful resource at Apex Nutrition. I don't have the website handy, but Google Apex Nutrition, and they're a very, very good resource for nutritional information and nutrition guidelines. You can even pick up a cookbook like the Feed Zone cookbook by Alan Lim with things that are designed to really work for cyclists without being overly fattening and overly full of sugar or carbs or things like that. All right. Don't think of it as a diet change, however. Think of it as a lifestyle change. Weight loss is a lifestyle change. You've already got the exercise part down pat. Now you just need to clean up the rest of it, clean up the diet, cut down on, you know, pizza twice a week. Instead of doing that, you know, do a healthy salad once a week and cut your pizza down to once a week or something. You know, there's a million things you can do. Stop with sodas, stop drinking sodas or anything like that. But that be that as it may, weight loss and all that is a topic for a completely different podcast. Like there could be books written on this. Only you will know what works for you in terms of weight loss. I can't really advise you on that unless you're doing one-on-one work with me. But weight loss, along with increasing your fitness, will increase your effectiveness as a cyclist. It will make you a better cyclist. Almost guaranteed. In fact, it is guaranteed. As long as you are maintaining a healthy weight and a healthy lifestyle, there can be no harm come from dropping excess weight. Period. End of discussion. Now, aside from weight, what other trainable things do we have that we can help make you a better you? Well, we can work on skills. And skills are something that many people really almost tend to forget when they think about training. And now skills can mean anything from handling skills, from descending skills, climbing techniques, bumping drills in the grass with your friends, neuromuscular skills like leg speed techniques, single-legged pedaling, high cadence work, low cadence work. Skills are something that are very, very trainable. Just by their nature and by the nature of the word skill means something that is acquired through repetition and acquired through practice. So by nature, skills are something that you should, really should be practicing, and you should be, you know, being very careful to add them into your training on a regular basis in order to master them. Because I will tell you, if you master your skills, especially your fundamental skills, being your leg speed skills, your group riding skills, your handling skills, the things that make you not only a better cyclist, but a safe cyclist and more effective cyclist. If you master those kind of things, you will be far, far, far ahead of the game, especially compared to most of your peers. The average person, the average club cyclist, just looking at them, you can tell whether they are highly skilled or poorly skilled. And that's also why I put such an emphasis on skills in my training plans. That's why I do so much pedaling work, so many leg speed drills in my training plans, especially in my base periods. And the reason is that most people have very little clue about leg speed control, about pedaling dynamics, about how to activate different muscle groups, things like that. Those things are extremely important, and those are very trainable. So to think about skills, Think about doing those bumping drills with your friends or your club mates. Find yourself a grassy field and just ride next to each other, lean on each other, elbow each other, push into each other, steer into each other. Learn how to lean against somebody who's pushing into you. For handling skills, you can set up rows of cones or something like that to practice handling and practice balance and things like that. You can practice track standing, which can get you out of any kind of, issue where you have to come to a sudden stop instead of putting your foot down. You can practice your cadence skills. You can do super spinning skills like high cadence, 130 RPM, 140 RPM. You can practice single leg drills at 60 RPM, at 90 RPM, at 110, 120 RPM. You can practice those single leg drills under low tension, under high tension, all kinds of things that will help you master your neuromuscular skills, your leg speed skills, and things that you need to ride safely and more powerfully. Okay, so now we've gone through all these things. You've got all these things you can do. You can train your thresholds, your VO2 maxes, your fatigue resistance. You can go do some weight loss work. You can be in the gym doing this. You can do cadence drills. You can do bumping drills. You can be, practicing on your group rides 3 times a week. But none of it really matters. Now, why do I say that none of it really matters? Well, I'll tell you why. None of it really matters unless you are training with a purpose. Unless you're training in such a way that mimics the events that you are hoping to succeed at, all that training is completely for nothing. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't, you're sitting there saying, but you just told me all these things that I can do, and now you're telling me that, it's worthless. It is, if not used properly. And this is where the big plug comes in for coaching or for training plans, which you've heard me do before. You get the most out of your skills and out of your work if you're training with a purpose. Okay, if you're following a structured plan and a structured type of training that will basically focus on your weaknesses as identified either by yourself or by a coach or by somebody else, or in some way, you're working on challenging your weaknesses above all while maintaining and continuing to build upon your strengths. So I'll give you a great example of myself. Okay, I am about 5'10, 143 pounds during the racing season. All right. I'm not going to give out power numbers. They're too variable. They're too ridiculous. But let's put it this way. I have a natural gift to go uphill quickly. I'm not quite a pure climber, but about as close to a pure climber as you can get without being a spindly 110, 110 pound mountain goat. Couple years back, actually more than that now, probably we're talking about 4 or 5 years now. Four or five years ago, my thing was going uphill. That was about it. I couldn't ride flats to save my life, and my idea of sprinting was shift up a gear and just pedal hard. Okay, hard to believe. For those of you who've ridden with me, it's extremely hard to believe that was really me, 4 or 5 years ago. And looking back on it, it's hard for me to believe as well. But I myself worked with a coach back then when I was a member of Cycle Club Kingston. A little plug for them, for those of you in the Hudson Valley. A relatively great group of people, and they helped push me on the road that I'm on today. But here, all whatever. I digress. I went from 1 year being basically a pure climber, beating people at the top of the hills. That's what I was there for. And spending a winter working on sprinting, building muscle mass, building strength, building technique, building pedaling skill technique. Getting stronger and testing and training, all of these things that I've talked about. And I was amazed that when I came out in the spring, And I started to ride with groups again, because most of the time, especially in the Northeast here, winter is harsh. Snow's on the ground. We're not outside very often, especially if you don't have all the gear to be outside. You're not outside very much. You're on the trainer, you're on the rollers. I was personally amazed. One of the first rides that we did in the spring, not only was I able to beat people at the top of hills, but I was able to actually win the bunch sprint back into town against a group of people who were actually fairly good sprinters. And now I'm not saying this to brag. I'm not saying this to toot my own horn or, yank my own chain or whatever you want to call it. But I'm going to illustrate that. I'm telling you that so I can illustrate this fact that the thing that my biggest weakness was finishing fast. And I trained specifically to minimize that weakness. Now, I never really turned that into a strength. I'm not going to win any field sprints against real true bunch sprinters. But I minimized that weakness. And through minimizing that weakness, I've added skill to my strength, which as a climber is going uphill. Sprinting has taught me how to attack uphill, has taught me how to explosively move uphill, as opposed to just go one speed, diesel it out. So it's the perfect illustration of training with a purpose, training your weaknesses and building your strengths. Minimize your weakness and build your strengths. Okay? Training with a purpose to mimic your events is really the next step in that. So take Battenkill, Tour of the Battenkill, for example, a very hilly ride, a very taxing ride, a ride that really will grind you into the ground and test the utmost limits of your climbing and physiological endurance. You need to mimic your events in your training, even if they're 10% of the length. Battenkill's for the lower cats is a 65-mile race. 65 miles. You need to be able, even if you're doing a 15-mile ride or a 15-mile training ride, you need to mimic the difficulty of that 65-mile race in that 15-mile training ride. You need to mimic the skills and the fundamentals necessary to succeed in that 65-mile race in your training rides. How many times have you heard someone say, oh, I just go out and I do 200 miles a week and I just ride and I get stronger? We've all heard it. How many times have you heard someone say, yeah, I've been going out, I've been doing 200 miles a week, I'm just not getting anywhere, so I'm going to do 250 miles a week? And you say, hey, Bob, how you doing with that 250 miles? Well, I'm not getting any better. I don't know what's going on. I'm going backwards. They hit that plateau. They're not training smart. They're just going out and trying to beat their body into submission. Remember, your body is constantly trying to shed itself of things that it doesn't need. If you're not challenging your body above and beyond what the physiology of your current state is, you will not get better. If you do not challenge your body to do something that it cannot physically or physiologically do, you will not improve. And that is exactly what training with a purpose and mimicking your events in your training is exactly about. All right? So, to quickly wrap up here, I know I've been talking for a while. You're getting antsy, you're sitting there, you're getting tight, you're getting tired of listening to me. So let's wrap it up. Aerobic thresholds, VO2 max, fatigue resistance, lactate threshold, weight, skills, leg speed, bumping, handling, descending, climbing, and training with a purpose are all things you can do to make yourself a better cyclist in the next year. A better you. Not a new you, but a better you. Because let's face it, you're already there. Your body is already there. Your body is fully capable of this. So why don't you make it better? Instead of making a new you, make a better you. To hell with all the muscle fiber type and mass and body size and body mass and biomechanics and all that. Take hold of the things that you can change and make the commitment to change them and make this your best year on the books so far. Make yourself the best cyclist you can be this year. All right, folks. I really appreciate you listening here. If you really like, you can visit me. Tailwind-coaching.com is my website. You can find me on Facebook as Tailwind Coaching. That site is that page actually on Facebook is new. Go ahead over there, hit the like button. There'll be information up there occasionally, actually more than occasionally. There'll be information up there frequently about training and this, that, and the other thing. You can find me on Strava, Rob Manning on Strava. You can email me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. If you do email me, please don't get too anxious. I've got a lot going on this time of year. I've got a lot. My first commitments are, of course, to my one-on-one coached athletes. You know who you are. and my commitments are first and foremost to them. And I've, like I said, with the site design and everything else, I've got consults going. I've got a few other things going on. So if I don't get to your question immediately, don't panic. I do read all my emails, and I will get back to you. Okay, coachrobdc@gmail.com, or leave me a message over on Tailwind Coaching over on Facebook. Okay, those are your options for me. If you want to check out my website for training plans, things like that. If you have any interest in being a one-on-one coached athlete with me, I do have a couple spots left, but those probably be going fast. I might have a few more coming up early to mid-February, but if you need that, drop me an email. Or check me out on Facebook, and we'll talk about that. All right? So thanks for listening, everybody. Ride safe, ride happy, get strong, be well, and be a better you in 2013. Happy New Year, folks. I'll talk to you soon.